This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Happy 2018, everybody. This is the first show of the new year.
Yay.
For us here at Solly and Steve on Sports.
Solly, and nothing has changed.
Unfortunately, you're right. Solly and Jeff coming to you from the Fred X Studios here on Long Island. It's the first show of the year. Steve and Danny, once again, somehow have prior commitments tonight. They are not here. They have their thoughts on the sports world. They have their predictions for, or at least Steve does, for the wild card, for the division round in the NFL. We got that to get to. We got wild card weekend to wrap up. We got news and notes from the Mets and the Islanders to get
well,
to.
Well, you got to inform me on all of this news, because as just, we stated,
yeah.
I have been away for 2 weeks.
2 weeks! Yeah, now why were you away for 2 weeks?
Because I was on vacation in Japan.
Yeah, what were you doing in Japan?
There was lots of things going on at the end of the year and going into the new year that I wanted to see finally for the first time.
How was the trip?
Long.
Other than that.
Fun.
What'd you do?
Went to this thing called Comiket. Bought a lot of fan comics of certain series.
Okay. What else?
Spent 3 days there. Was very tired by the end. So I basically slept in during New Year's. But I did stay up to see New Year's.
All right. There you go.
Yes.
What else happened?
Then was what you're interested in.
Yeah.
On January 4th, Wrestle Kingdom 12.
Very nice.
That was a great show.
I saw some of the highlights. I haven't watched the full card yet, but I hate you.
And I am now a big fan of Los Ingronables de Japón.
English translation? Or is there one?
The Japanese Ingronables.
All right. Match of the night on that card.
Oh, God. As a lot of reviewers have said, I think the top three matches, I can't put them in order. I'll just go by match order.
Okay.
Match number six, which was the fatal four-way for the junior heavyweight title between Will Ospreay, Kushida, Hiromu Takahashi, and the champion going into it, the villain Marty Scurll.
And Takahashi's still going after all these years. The guy's incredible.
No, Hiromu is not.
Takahashi's good, though. I've seen him wrestle a couple times.
Yeah,
no, fantastic.
I think I said the wrong last name for Hiromu, but...
Yeah, Takahashi's good, though.
Yeah.
He's very, very good.
Yeah, he faced Jay White. But that was a match afterward. And that was all right match, yep. But it wasn't as stellar as the other ones. But that Fatal 4-Way was amazing.
Okay.
Then match 8 of 9, which was for the U.S. Championship, Alpha versus Omega.
Yep.
Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega was an amazing match.
Which I've only seen the highlights. I haven't watched the full match yet, and I want to. I'm probably going to within the next week or two.
Yes.
But from what everybody's been telling me,
online to New Japan World.
All right. That's answered my question right there. The match is outstanding.
Yes. And the final match, match 9, between Kazuchika Okada, the champion, versus Tetsuya Naito, the leader of Los Ingronables de Japón. With his tranquilo way of wrestling and destino.
Oh, you have so much fun saying that, don't you?
Oh, it's great. Oh, and the finish of that match was just... Wow.
And Okada's put on some 5-star classics over the last couple of years.
Yes, and there is a reason why that he is in the position that he is. And the building was ready to pop if Naito actually won, because he was like one of those characters that were kind of like I want to say kind of like how Stone Cold became super popular, like he was hated and stuff like that,
and it just built
It just built when he became a heel faction leader and stuff. But it's like he has that same attitude and like doesn't really care about things. He just want to whoops ass and just like when he won the Intercontinental title of Naito, he just like threw the belt around, just didn't care about things
there
and
you
whatnot.
Go.
Yeah, so
that's the way.
And there's a whole
whole
backstory like going back from 4 years ago where he was supposed to be in the main event, but there was a vote to see who should be in the main event,
and he lost out,
and his match was bumped from the main event because the fans didn't believe in him, and so he
it was basically a gigantic middle finger to the fans.
Yeah, well, like he lost the match after that. Then he was basically, I don't say exile, but that's kind of like the thing. Like he moved on with his anger to Mexico, where he joined up with Los Ingobernables, and then he came back to be the leader of Los Ingobernables de Japón,
which is the other super group. I'm assuming that's opposing the Bullet Club.
That is one of the opposing factions.
All right.
Along with Chaos.
Yes, I forgot about
that's
Chaos.
That's where Kazuchika Okada is part of.
And like I said, Okada's put on some 5-star classics, yes. So is Kenny Omega the last couple
and
of
I
years.
And somehow, my seats, I didn't realize until I got there, were field seats.
Really?
Yes.
All right, so what are we talking about? Better than what we had for WrestleMania.
Well, there was no Empire State Building in the way. So, yeah, I didn't have to move.
Yeah, that's true. We got bumped from our seats at Mania because there was a pole in our way.
Well, we wanted to be moved.
Yeah, it's good. We
you and me want to be moved because we had the Empire State Building blocking half of the frickin' ring.
I know. We were higher up, but still, we got to see everything.
Oh, yeah. We got moved up to, like, where the hard camera was.
We were sitting next to the hard camera, but we didn't care. We were at WrestleMania.
But no, because also our seats were not as filled, the area, so we were able to, like, you know, stretch out and relax a bit.
Yeah.
And then we see the whole stage where the production team can see where the production team and everyone at home sees from.
Yeah.
So we got basically a great view of that. I don't mind sitting there, honestly.
I don't either.
I like it how when we went to the ticket guy on the field level and said, well, can we do something about these seats? And the guy's like, well, we could move you, but don't you want your sign to be seen?
I'm like, no.
I mean, that would be a bonus. I just want to see the damn matches. I want to see the ring. I want
so
to
do
see
I.
the entertainment. I don't see half a ring and look up when I'm supposed to be down there looking at the ring.
Yeah. I'm like, we spent all this we spent a crap load of money on WrestleMania.
Yeah, we spent a nice hefty penny on that one.
I know we did.
320 hefty pennies.
Yeah. Good times.
Yep, $3.20 on a ticket. Yep.
Yes, we did. 320 pennies. That was a pretty good chunk of change for that show.
Yeah, I mean, God, I don't know how I can I don't know how I'm still going to recover from that. It's been like, what, like 5 years and I still haven't recovered?
I know.
$3.20.
I'm still sweating bullets over it.
I know.
Well, I can tell you this much. I know a couple of teams who aren't sweating bullets. The Kansas City, well, the biggest one being Kansas City.
Yes, you need
Chiefs.
To tell me what has been going on.
All right.
Well, I've been away. I've been enjoying my time in Japan. Not really in the know of the sporting world these past two
weeks.
I want to say months, but I wish it was months.
No, it's not that far. It's only been 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So in the last 2 weeks,
yes,
we have now gone through week 17 of the
NFL
season.
In the last 2 weeks.
And we've now gone through the wildcard weekend in the NFL.
The only thing I really noticed was Buffalo Bills fans going crazy because they actually made it the playoffs because of all of the rules that they had to have other teams win and lose.
It's basically they had to win and they had to have the three teams ahead of them lose out, which is exactly what happened. Bills got into the playoffs for the first time since the Music City Miracle, the loss to the Titans in the 99 playoffs. Haven't been back since, and what do the Bills do? They only managed to score 3 lousy points in by far and away the worst game of the entire weekend.
As you know, they're called the Walking Mediocrity.
Yep, it was a 10-3 loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Hey, look, right now the Bills have more points than the Patriots.
Very true, but that is soon quickly going to change.
You never know.
Well, the Pats are playing the Titans. Come on.
I'm expecting shutout right there.
We'll get to that later on.
Titans are going to shut out the Pats, I'm telling you.
We're holding you to that. We have audio evidence.
You know that's sarcasm, right?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, good.
But how funny would this be, though, if that actually happens and we talk about that next week on the show?
Imagine if I actually did predict that. It's like, man, you know I was being serious. I was being serious. I wasn't joking. I said joking as a red herring.
Yeah. You said you were joking to throw everybody on the wrong trail.
Yes.
And it's exactly what happened.
I zigged that way. They went that way. And then I zagged and threw you off the track. Ha!
Because that was your master plan all along.
Yes.
But if that actually happens, though, I would love to see Danny's reaction to it.
Oh my God.
They would have a heart attack.
His jaw would not recover from hitting the floor.
No, it'd be scraping down.
Yeah, he'll be walking with his jaw scraping. He'll be bloodied up, and you'll see his bone.
He wouldn't be able to talk right.
No.
I can see the look on Danny's face now. It's the same look he always gets. That.
No one can.
I know.
So what does that silence mean?
It was basically he's got kind of his eyes rolled in the back of his head. His mouth's open. It looks like he just got... It was like a cartoon character getting bashed in.
Okay, here's a good imagery.
Okay.
Anyone who's listening and is interested to figure out what I'm trying to say, Google Festus.
Yes.
From the WWE.
There you go.
Look at his face. Look at it good.
And that's a perfect example of what Danny would look like if the Pats could shut out.
Exactly.
But I don't think we're going to have to go there.
Nope.
Luckily, they're playing Tennessee and not Jacksonville.
Festus before the bell rings.
Yes.
Because somehow, when you hear the bell ring, Festus snaps into an awesome wrestler.
Yeah, and he's now an even
And when the bell rings once again, and he turns back to a potato.
State, yeah. And now he's turned into an awesome wrestler is Luke Gallows.
Yes.
So, but anyway, back to actual football. That's kind of, I think, what happened with Jacksonville in the second half of this ball game because they realized, oh, crap, we got a playoff game to play.
Yes.
Buffalo managed, I'm not even joking, 3 yards. I mean, 3 total points, excuse me.
That meant amazing. 3 yards through the whole game.
I know.
What a blunder that would be.
It got so bad that even with an injured LeSean McCoy rushing for 75 yards on 19 carries, Buffalo couldn't do anything. Tyrod Taylor got hurt in this game, too. And they had to rely on Nathan Peterman. No surprise, he's ruined it. Nathan Peterman threw an interception to seal the game. Peterman went 1 of 3 for 14 yards and a pick. And this is the same guy who threw 5 picks in the first half of the one game he started week 11.
Wonderful.
But that's because Tyrod Taylor got hurt. And a small
How early did Tyrod Taylor get hurt?
4th quarter. He got hurt late in the game.
Oh, so but I thought you were making say that Peterman played most of the game.
No. Tyrod Taylor played most of the game.
Tyrod Taylor did nothing then.
13 of 37, 134 yards and an interception.
Did he get sacked? Were there any sacks by Saxonville?
I think there was a couple. I'm double-checking that now.
Please do.
2 sacks.
Eh.
One from Jackson and 1 from Miles Jack.
They could do better.
Yeah, they could.
Well, they got to do better against Pittsburgh.
Yes, they do.
Even though they did beat Pittsburgh.
They have. But what's even more amazing is the fact that Marcus Mariota had more rushing yards than he did passing yards, and he led the Jets in rushing this week. Leading with...
Wait. He led the who in rushing?
Jacksonville. Blake Bortles. Yeah, I know.
I knew I heard something wrong there.
Blake Bortles led Jacksonville in rushing this week, and he actually ran for more yards than he threw. Leonard Fournette's the featured running back for the Jaguars and might possibly win, or at least be in solid contention for Rookie of the Year. Had 21 carries for 57 yards. Blake Bortles, 10 carries, 88 yards rushing. His throwing line, 12 of 23, 87 yards throwing and a touchdown. He ran for more yards than he threw. And Jacksonville still managed to win the game. Jacksonville outplayed Buffalo. It was a crap fest the entire night. Because that game was so horrible, I've decided to move on from it and laugh at the pain of Andy Reid. Yeah. Because the Kansas City Chiefs have now lost an NFL record 6 straight home games.
In the playoffs?
Yes. 6 straight home games in the playoffs. And they lost 6 of their final 7 games in the regular season. Kansas City was one of the better teams in the AFC when the year started. But they lost 6 of 7 going down the stretch. And I don't know why I was even thinking this. I picked Kansas City to win the game originally because I thought Alex Smith would be under more control in this game than Marcus Mariota. And despite the fact that Derrick Henry had a great game, for the record, for Tennessee, finished with 157 rushing yards, which is an outstanding football game. But Kansas City was up at halftime. They'd already scored 21 points by the half. They were up 21-3 at halftime, blew the lead, fell 22-21 to the Titans on a self-touchdown pass by Mariota. You heard me say that correctly. Mariota threw the ball to himself, unintentionally.
What?
Final play of the... It was near the end of the ball game.
What?
Mariota went to throw the ball over the middle. It got deflected by Darrelle Revis, came back to Mariota, who caught it and ran it in off the edge just inside the pylon for a touchdown.
I guess that's legal.
It is. The ball never hit the ground. He literally threw it over the middle and hit Darrelle Revis, who was jumping up to block it. It hit him in the arms, bounced right back to Mariota.
I mean, he did try to knock it down, but knocked down into Mariota's arms.
It fell right into Mariota's hands, and he went around the end and scored.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
something you don't see every day.
I don't know how to.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt has the video up for me.
All right, here we go.
You know, you got to turn that to me.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you. Okay. He stumbled, but he's going to throw. Oh my God.
Yeah, it hit Revis.
He did not need to jump though.
Who, Revis?
No, Mariota. Wow. Yeah, he ran to the line of scrimmage and threw it. Oh, jeez. Hit the replay.
Yep. Throws, hits Revis.
Wow.
Right back to Mariota, and he scored. That
and
cut
hits
into the lead.
They
made it 21-10.
Yeah, that cut the lead.
Yep.
Wow.
And then I got to give credit, though, to Eric Decker, the former Jet.
Decker is in the Tennessee?
Yeah, Decker's a wide receiver for the Titans.
Okay.
He had a drop early in this football game. He was wide open. There was no Kansas City player within about 5 yards of him. The football hits him in the chest, hits his hands, and then hits the turf. He dropped a wide open pass.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, how far do you have to fall if you're Eric Decker to have that happen to you? Like, the ball literally hit him and fell.
Yeah, should have kept his eye on the ball.
But he didn't. He later redeemed himself because he scored the go-ahead touchdown.
There you go.
So that's the ultimate way to redeem yourself is... by doing that.
Is it like Andy Reid curse? Like, that has to be some type of curse.
I think he might be at this point.
Because he just can't seem to win at all.
No, especially not in the playoffs.
That's what I mean.
He had one good playoff run with the Eagles.
That went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Patriots. I remember that.
Yep. And that's the year, for those of you who don't remember, T.O. broke his ankle at the end of the regular season. Owens came back, played in the Super Bowl, didn't help. Still got steamrolled.
Yep.
So... and that was one of only two catches that Deckard had on the day. Finished with two catches for 29 yards and a touchdown.
Good for him.
I like Eric Decker, though. I always have. But the problem with Kansas City is they've had poor clock management. They've done that most of the second half of the year. They've barely used Kareem Hunt, who finished with 11 carries for 42 yards and a touchdown. And I genuinely feel bad for Kareem Hunt because this is a guy who, at the start of the year, would have been the front runner for most people, myself included, for possibly winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. But it didn't. But he sort of fell by the wayside. It would have either been him or Deshaun Watson with the way Watson was playing in Houston. Excuse me, before Watson got hurt. And then Watson goes down. I'm thinking, all right, Kareem Hunt's going to keep up this pace. Stupid me, I trade for him in our league. I sent Todd Gurley. It was like a four-player swap. The two big pieces that were moved, I got Hunt. I sent Danny Todd Gurley.
Look how that turned out.
Yeah. Danny beat me in the semifinals.
And did he win?
Yeah, Danny won the league.
There you go.
Yeah, Danny won the entire league. And I don't know if anybody had told you this. He actually bought a trophy.
God.
We haven't seen it yet. There hasn't been an official trophy presentation as of this recording yet.
So the commissioner is giving himself a trophy.
Well, no, he wants all past league winners to be present because I think we're all getting some sort of trophy. I think. I don't know that yet. I think we're still trying to work out the details for that.
How does it take long to work out the details of that?
I don't know, but Danny apparently got a trophy for the league. He's going to be presenting it to himself along with the prize money.
Here's that time to come here.
I know. So yeah, the prize money for our league was, if you finish in third place, which I did, you get your original money back, which was a $10 buy-in for the league. So I'm getting my $10 back. Second place wins $20. Winner of the league, $70. So Danny won $70.
And he used that money to buy a trophy?
I don't know if he has it yet or not. I think he bought the trophy and then he's going to get the $70.
I hope it's a stupid plastic participation trophy.
So do I. I mean, this is the same guy, mind you.
With the crappy engravement saying winner.
Yeah. This is the same guy who also bought two plastic WWE titles for a mini golf tournament that we had a couple years back.
That is true. We cover it in paper, right? Champion.
Yeah, we did. I mean, again, I wouldn't put it past Danny at this point. But seriously, I do. A small part of me almost does feel bad for Kansas City. They've lost six of their last nine playoff. They've lost, sorry, eight of their last nine playoff games, and have lost six straight at home in the postseason.
Que sera, sera. I mean, I don't know what else to say, because it's like, well, that's the breaks. You just can't seem to win, and whatever happens, you just butt fumble your way to lose.
That's not, he's not, Mark Sanchez has nothing to do with this, okay?
It's just an expression.
I know, but the AFC games were meh. The Tennessee game was actually pretty decent. The Buffalo game sucked.
Because Buffalo was in it.
Yeah, well, that has nothing to do with it. It's just a crappy football game. It was.
Because Buffalo was in it.
That had nothing to do with it. It was just a crap game. I want to say something else, but I'm trying to keep the show as clean as possible.
Because Buffalo was in it.
Okay, that game was so bad.
They're mediocre. They're mediocre at best.
So were the Jaguars. Because, seriously, kind of what happened with this Jacksonville game almost reminded me of what happened with Denver when Tim Tebow was quarterback.
Hey. God was on his side until God met the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly. Which is what's going to happen to Bortles Mania next week.
Aww.
But yeah, the two better games are the NFC games. The Falcons are moving on. The Rams are going home. Atlanta pulled out a 26-13 win. And truth be told, with the way Todd Gurley was playing at the start of this game, I thought the Rams were going to run away with it.
No really? How did that...
No pun intended. I mean, Gurley went off. He had 101 yards on the ground. Robert Woods finished with...
Hey, this is the first half?
No, this is the entire game.
Oh.
Gurley finished with 101 yards running and 10 yards receiving on 4 catches. Robert Woods had 142 receiving yards. And Jared Goff finished with 259 yards throwing and a touchdown. Didn't matter. He was outplayed by Matt Ryan, who went 21 of 30, 218 and a touchdown.
They could be the dark horse of the entire playoffs.
Hey, well, they've got a lot of revenge on their mind.
Yeah.
After what happened last year.
And after that season-long Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah, I mean, I there was one stretch. I got to be honest, I didn't think Atlanta was going to get in.
Yeah, that was like the second quarter of the season.
Yeah, well, nah, I gave them a little more credit, but by the time we hit like week 5, week 6, I'm thinking to myself, Atlanta's out of it.
Yeah, the second quarter of the season.
Yeah, so Atlanta managed to fight their way back. They got into the playoffs, and they beat the champs of the NFC West, which, under what I would consider normal circumstances, is one of the toughest divisions to play in football.
Yeah, that NFC West was tough. But look, Atlanta played against is in the NFC South.
Yeah, I know.
And that was even more of a hell of a division.
Yeah, all three teams in the playoffs, two of which faced off in the Sunday night game, which was the best game of the weekend.
And that
Carolina, New Orleans. It's Carolina, New Orleans. New Orleans swept the series. And by the way, one other quick note on the Rams-Falcons game. What I think cost the Rams in this game was special teams. Because not once, but twice on punt, the Rams couldn't hang on to the football.
Oh.
The guy would make the catch.
A turnover on punt?
Yeah, he fumbled twice on punt.
Ah.
Caught the punt, took a couple of strides, got hit, lost the football. Atlanta took over and scored off of it.
I thought, no. The way you made it sound like was that the receiver, like, bumbled the ball and dropped it. But look, the guy got smacked, and because he got smacked hard, the ball got dislodged.
Right.
So that's not a blame on the receiver, because if he got smacked hard in the right place, no matter what, your grip will loosen, the ball will fly out. That's a good job on Atlanta's special teams.
But again, if you're the Rams, you got to do a better job of protecting the football. I know you're going to get hit in football. That's the name of the game.
But if you still get hit the right way, one step and you...
One of them was. The other one, he just bobbled the ball.
Okay,
and was
okay,
down
okay,
to him.
Okay. So that second one, the bobble, yeah, that's his fault. But the other one, it's like, it's more like you got to give credit to Atlanta.
Yeah, you do, and that's exactly what I'm doing. And I also think special teams, to a degree, played a major factor in the Carolina game, because at one point, Graham Gano, the Carolina kicker, missed a chip shot from 27 yards out, which
How do you miss a chip shot?
It's shorter than extra point distance, and somehow Graham Gano managed to miss
it. Okay, were the laces in?
Yes, they were. Laces have to be out.
As one very important movie in the 90s have taught us, laces out.
And that's not what happened in this game. The laces were in, Graham Gano missed his kick.
Can we call him Ray Finkel?
Graham Ray Finkel Gano.
Thank you.
Missed his kicks.
Finkel is Einhorn.
Einhorn is Finkel.
Einhorn is a man. Einhorn is a man.
Oh, I love that movie.
I know what our closing song is.
Yes, we do. And this canceled out a fantastic game for both Greg Olsen and Christian McCaffrey for Carolina. Olsen finished with 107 yards receiving and a touchdown. McCaffrey, 101 yards receiving and a touchdown. And this after Greg Olsen had missed a good chunk of time this year with a foot injury. So I give Greg Olsen all the credit in the world for being able to come back and play in this game and play as well as he did.
Props to him. He's a tough son of a gun.
Yes, he is. He also had a solid day from Cam Newton, 24 of 40.
So why did they lose then? Besides the kicker.
Well, because Drew Brees went 23 of 33, 376 yards.
So basically the Carolina defense was garbage.
I wouldn't say that. They were just outplayed by Drew Brees in the playoffs. And it also helps when Michael Thomas and Ted Ginn both have huge games. Ted Ginn, 4 catches, 115 yards, including an 80-yard touchdown pass. Touchdown reception. And then you had Michael Thomas going for 8 catches and 131 yards. So it was basically 2 guys lit up the Carolina defense like a cheap cigar.
So basically the Carolina defense was garbage.
To a certain degree, yes.
That's what I said to begin with. And you're like, no.
Hey, they did a good job of stopping the run. I'll give them that.
But they just couldn't stop the ball from flying.
Pretty much, yeah.
A bad secondary.
Yes. It's exactly what it was.
You could have just said that.
I know. I just felt like prolonging it.
No, you didn't.
Well, I will say this much. All right. I want your honest opinion on something.
Okay.
Did you hear about what the Oakland Raiders did to bring in their new head coach?
I know they hired Gruden.
Yeah, but did you hear how much money they threw at him? $100 million for John Gruden to coach the Raiders.
Jeez.
Yep.
Is a head coach really worth $100 million?
Apparently to the Raiders it is. That's how much they paid John Gruden.
You know there's like some group in Oakland that's trying to say that the Oakland Raiders didn't use the Rooney rule?
I know, but...
I mean, you can understand that, but it's also like, if you're a team that has a coach in mind and you want to go after that coach, I understand the whole fair competition, but again, the Oakland Raiders have something in mind and they want to go after that person. I feel like if the Rooney rule should be in effect, if they don't know who they want, then they're going through the damn process.
Right.
This is more like, we want this coach, we're going to do whatever we can to get this coach, and we are going to get him, period.
Yeah, but... for whatever reason, that's not how they felt.
Yeah. So does Gruden have, like, total power now in Oakland?
I don't think so.
In terms of GM and player decision?
The Bill Belichick mold? No. I think he's just head coach.
And why does he have $100 million then?
I have no idea. But
He has to have more power than just being a head coach.
I think there's more to it than that. I haven't fully read into it, but
should have.
Yeah, I know. This is now unfinished business for John Gruden as head coach of the Raiders. Will be the start of his 5th season next year as Raiders head coach. He coached the team from 98 through 2001 and finished with a 38-26 record in Oakland. Went 2-2 in the playoffs, finishing in the AFC Championship to Baltimore in 2000. Lost there. Lost in a Pats Tuck Rule game in 2001.
Ah, the Tuck Rule.
Then went on to Tampa Bay.
And beat the former team.
Won the 2002 Super Bowl, beating the Raiders. Then finished with 2 more playoff-bound years, losing in 2005 in the wildcard game to the Redskins and in 2007 in the wildcard game to the Giants. Finished his coaching career to this point. He sits at 95-81 after going 57-55 with the Raiders. I mean, not with the Raiders, with the Bucks. After spending...
Like
six years in Tampa. Yeah.
That was a good run.
Which were 3 playoff years, including... Sorry, 7 years in Tampa.
Yeah, 7.
3 playoff seasons, including a Super Bowl title his first year.
Look, you get a Super Bowl out of that. Good for him.
And speaking of head coaches...
So why is it unfinished business then? Because he didn't win in Oakland?
Yeah, his last 2 years in Oakland were...
Yeah, I know. AFC Championships and Division Round Loss.
So I think because of the way he went out, because he went 12-4 and 10-6 his last 2 years in Oakland. So I think it's... Jaden Gruden's way of, A, wanting to get back into coaching because he spent the last, I think, almost decade now in the broadcast booth. I know he spent the last 5 years doing Monday Night Football.
Yes.
And he was pretty good at it, I'm not going to lie. He actually made Monday Night Football somewhat fun to watch.
Good for him.
But I think he had the itch to get back into coaching, and I'm making the same argument now, I think, with Coach Gruden that I made with Phil Jackson a few years ago, is that they threw a boatload of money at him to draw him back to the sidelines to coach.
At least he's coaching, unlike Phil Jackson,
right,
where he was given boatloads of money from the Knicks.
Yeah, but Exactly. And John Gruden, I think, was better off at what he was doing than what Phil Jackson did with the Knicks. Which is another argument entirely.
All right.
But as you know, the Giants are looking for a head coach themselves.
I heard about them hiring a new GM finally.
Yeah, no, they have hired a new GM.
Who is he? What is he all about?
I know he run.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. I'm drawing.
You gotta have these things ready for me.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
I know. So
I'm fighting jet lag. Not really, but I'm fighting jet lag.
If you want to call it that, sure, go ahead. If that makes you feel better, why not?
It's valid.
No, it is. It is. It's very valid. I'll give you that. All right. So, yeah, John Mara still owning the team, obviously. They're still looking for a head coach.
Yes,
Dave Gettleman is now general manager.
Okay, and who is he and where is he from and what has he done?
He spent time as general manager in Carolina, had a fair amount of success, and now he's hoping to move that success over with the Giants.
Was he just let go from Carolina?
No. He's been, I think, a consultant with a couple of other teams since then. Last known residence, I believe, was Tampa, but I'm double-checking that now.
Okay.
And while Dave Gettleman's been hired as GM, he's actually looking for... No, he was general manager with Carolina up until 2016.
Okay.
He was senior pro personnel analyst with the Giants in 2012, and he was a pro personnel director from 99 to 2011 with the Giants.
Okay, some good experience then.
He's been working as an administrator in the NFL since 1986.
Okay.
So he's got plenty of experience around the league.
Yes.
And he's got plenty of experience with the Giants because he was also a scout for the G-Men in 98.
Yes, okay.
So now he's got that going
so
for
he has,
him.
So he has some familiarity of what the Giants way should really be.
Yeah, and he worked with the Giants.
Not the Jerry Reese Giants way.
No. But he's worked with the Giants from 99 to 2012, went on to Carolina, and now he's back.
Welcome back. Don't sing.
I know. But hey, at least I can carry a tune, as long as it has handlebars on it. Anyway,
Boo.
The Giants are looking for a new head coach, and one of the most recent name I've heard pop up in the discussion is Patriots defensive coordinator.
Yes, I heard about that today.
Matt Patricia. They're looking into Matt Patricia to become the new head coach of the Giants. The Giants can't make anything official until the Patriots season is over, which might not happen until February 5th. At the rate this is going with New England. Because I could see them getting by Jacksonville, and I could see them possibly getting by Pittsburgh.
Jacksonville, again, is playing Pittsburgh.
All right, Tennessee. I could see Jacksonville losing to Pittsburgh.
I've been away for 2 weeks, and I know this.
Yeah, I know. They're going to end up beating Tennessee, they'll beat Pittsburgh, and they'll play in the Super Bowl.
Okay, Matt's making his predictions already.
I know, we'll do that again in Pigskin Pick'em later
nice
on.
Nice way to tease it by giving them out already, Matt.
I didn't say scores, though.
It doesn't matter. You told the whole world who you think will win.
Yeah, but I didn't say how about how much.
Loopholes.
Yeah, I know. They're great, aren't they?
No. Unless they benefit me.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's still potential that Matt Patricia could come and be the head coach of the New York Giants.
Do you think that'll be a good move?
Potentially. I mean, I've seen...
It's yes or no.
Jury's out. That's the way
why,
I see
okay,
the
so why
out.
Do you? So what do you think is the reason why it's going to be a good move, and why do you think it's going to be a bad move?
Well, the only negative thing I might even remotely have about Matt Patricia
is because he wears his hat backwards, right?
No! And no one has nothing to
he
do
has
with
a scruffy beard.
Hell no! It has nothing to do with the fact
he,
that he's
he has a scruffy
man.
Beard and wears his hat backwards.
No, it's because he's a hideous coordinator. Sometimes coordinators don't necessarily translate well into head coaches. Sometimes they do, sometimes
but
they
also,
don't.
But also, he's a student under Bill Belichick.
Belichick, which is a huge plus.
And is it really?
I think, have
we seen coaches under the Belichick wing not do very
Charlie Weiss didn't do very well. Eric Mangini did for a little while.
I feel like Mangini didn't get a fair shake at all.
I know. I thought Mangini could have done better with the Jets,
yes.
Honestly. But Charlie Weiss was a complete bust. So one out of two off the
were
top
of
my head
right now.
Were there
other coaches that were under the Belichick wing?
There's a couple that have gone on, but the names are escaping me at the moment. Yeah, well, there also been rumors floating around that Bill Belichick might come this way and coach the Giants.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean it would have cost the Giants a crap load of player personnel, possibly cash and draft picks.
Yeah, that's not happening.
I can't see the hoodie going anywhere. I honestly cannot see him leaving New England. Not gonna happen. But yeah, Matt Patricia's name I've heard floating around, so we'll see what happens.
Hold on, let me see here. Bill Belichick. I'm trying to see if I can get this search right. It'll be amazing.
Bill Belichick coaches.
Coaching. Tree.
Coaching record for Bill Belichick disciples.
I don't care about that. You know, yeah. Oh, good. Branches of the Bill that's awesome. Thank you, Reddit. I got to see this. Okay. So let's see this. Thank you, Reddit. I want to see the damn image. I don't care. View image. Thank you. Okay, so where is Bill Belichick here? Bill Belichick, where are you? I see Bill Parcells. Am I at the right place here?
I don't know. Jeff's trying to look it up on one side.
Right
I'm trying a couple
here?
Of others.
Am I at the right place here?
Okay, let's see. Where are you? Belichick. I see Brian Billick.
Oh, yeah. There's another name that just popped up. Josh McDaniels was a disciple of Bill Belichick's. Josh McDaniels was an offensive coordinator under Bill Belichick.
Who was above Bill Belichick?
What do you mean?
Was he under a certain tree?
What are you talking about?
Hold on, let me see here. Yeah, no.
Well, one of Belichick's disciples was Josh McDaniels, who ended up going on to coach in the NFL. He ended up coaching in 2009, was fired after 12 games in year two. He lost 8 of the last 10 in 2009 to finish 8-8, and was fired after going 3-9 the following year.
So Bill Belichick is under the Bill Parcells tree.
Yeah.
And Bill Belichick has 3 disciples right now.
One is Josh McDaniels.
Yes.
Which I just talked about.
Yes.
One is Charlie Weiss.
Not on the list here.
Really? Charlie Weiss didn't make the list? Who did?
Eric Mangini.
Yeah.
And Romeo Crennel.
Crennel, that was the other one I was thinking of. Wow.
Okay, so out of those 3.
Mangini probably had the best record.
And that's not a good indicator of how well the disciples under the Belichick tree have been.
Which is not very good at all.
So that's your reason for concern for Matt Patricia.
Yes. Being a Belichick disciple is one thing, but it doesn't necessarily translate well into being a head coach on your own because you don't have a guy of his mindset trying to control those creative juices.
But also, I guess you could say from a positive that he's been with the Patriots for a very long time. I don't remember how many years Patricia has been part of the good old Patriots regime.
It's been a while, too.
Being a part of that regime means you have a lot of... I don't want to say clout, because clout's not the right word I want to say.
Right.
But a lot of...
Experience?
Experience, yes. But, you know, the Patriots' name brings respect. And being a head coach, he's initially going to get that respect because he is a part of the New England Patriots for all those years. And how many years is it, Matt? Because you have it already up there.
2004, Matt Patricia came on with the New England Patriots, first as an offensive assistant. 2005, assistant offensive line coach. Linebackers coach 2006 to 2010, safeties coach 2011, and he's been the defensive coordinator from 2012 to his current position right now.
That's amazing that he went from offense to defense.
Yep. He's actually been, and he started out working in college with Rensselaer College in 96, he coached at Amherst 99 to 2000, then Syracuse as an offensive graduate assistant 01 to 03, and then moved on to the Patriots.
All right, then.
And he's got 3 Super Bowl rings to prove it. So he's got, to a degree, Matt Patricia knows what he's doing.
It's amazing that even though Bill Belichick was under the Bill Parcells tree, that he can't, like right now, his 3 disciples haven't done much.
I know.
I mean, listen to the names under the Bill Parcells tree, these 4.
Yep, there's
Bill Belichick.
Yep.
Sean Payton.
Who's pretty good.
Tom Coughlin.
Had good success.
I would say so. And Tony Sparano.
Okay, 3 out of 4. Sparano was all right, but the other 3, I think, did quite well for themselves.
Yes.
And speaking of good decision-making, I want your opinion on this. Did you hear about the newest signee with the New York Mets?
I heard about Jay Bruce, yes.
All right. 3 years.
Let's talk about this quickly because we also have to get into predictions, and also we got to talk about, I remember hearing that there was a college football tournament going on.
Yeah, we'll get to that too, but you want to give Danny's thoughts on the Mets?
Yes, I mean, this will be quick because, again, we're... You know, 2/3 of the way done.
Yeah. So we'll get into Danny's thoughts, we'll get into Steve's thoughts, and then we'll move on.
Yes, okay. So here it is, Dan's thoughts. I mean, I personally, before I go into Dan's thoughts, I mean, I guess this is a good move, but unfortunately, I think the Mets don't seem to have a lot of players that complement each other.
They don't.
Because that outfield doesn't seem to complement each other.
Although I'm still hearing talks that it might be looking into Andrew McCutchen of the Pirates.
I mean, that'll be awesome.
I've also heard Todd Frazier and Mike Moustakis' names thrown around the last couple of days.
That would have been good a few years ago.
Hell, I've heard Jason, the Mets were this close, and I'm holding my fingers barely apart from each other on Jason Kipnis.
Didn't he, like, not want to go to the Mets?
No, it's ownership turned it down at the last minute.
Why?
Money. They didn't want to overpay for Kipnis because they just spent $39 million.
This is why I'm an apathetic Met fan.
Now, the Mets had spent $39 million on Jay Bruce.
But that's like, what, 3 years?
Yes, 3 years, $39 million.
Okay, so $13 million, that's nothing
now,
in MLB money.
Jason Kipnis has 2 years left on his contract at $30.5 million total. The Mets ownership didn't want to have to add that much of a salary onto it yet. Jason Kipnis is actually a pretty good second baseman.
You need that.
Now, I'm still hearing Jose Reyes might be brought back to play second base, but you could have got Jason Kipnis and you didn't. But anyway.
That's me dying
inside. While Jeff's
groaning
over Jason Kipnis, I'll give Steve's thoughts on.
Please.
On the Mets. Then we'll get to Danny's. All right, Steve's thoughts are as follows. Quote, the Mets finally made a move, but was it the right one? Absolutely. Hardly anyone wants to play for the Mets, so when you have a player coming off a good season
with the Mets,
who the fans grew to like, and when your outfielder and first base is in doubt, you definitely have to make this signing, and for once, the Mets did something good. But will this be their only move? Probably, and it's sad as a fan, but I guess we are lucky that we even got Bruce back. Once again, the Mets only make a move because of pressure from fans and really all of baseball. Maybe one day they will actually make a move because they want to win, but the day that happens, we will have a different owner. Steve's thoughts on the Mets and Jay Bruce. What about Danny?
Okay. I am happy that the Mets did something productive. They went out and signed Jay Bruce to a reasonable 3-year, $39 million contract. Bruce was liked in the locker room and a leader from what reports are saying. For me to say that the Mets had a successful offseason, though, can't end here. The Mets need to go out and make another splash. It's highly unlikely, but I want the Mets to go after Andrew McCutchen and Josh Harrison. The Mets have a better, less crappier farm system than the San Francisco Giants, who are also after Kutch. Harrison is also a second baseman. The Mets can have an outfield of Cespedes, Kutch, and Bruce, and will have to wait for Conforto to come back. When he comes back, Bruce can go to first base and give Smith more time to develop.
Which is what I was thinking when the Mets first signed Jay Bruce in the first place.
Duh.
Because you have an outfield that's going to consist of, at least on paper right now,
Conforto
in center, probably.
Yeah, Cespedes, who doesn't want to play anywhere else but left.
And Jay Bruce in right field.
Which means it's like Manny Ramirez 2018 edition.
Pretty much. And when you want to give like Dominic Smith the day off because he's struggling, move Jay Bruce to first base, move Conforto over to right, and put either Juan Lagares or Brandon Nimmo, if both of them are still around, in center field. Even though I think Juan Lagares has become more of a liability and or possibly Ray Ardonia's syndrome in that he's more known for his defense than his hitting right now.
Yep.
This is a guy who, remember, won a gold glove a couple of years ago in center field.
Yep.
All right, so there's that with the Mets. Do you want to get into college football before
yes.
or after the picks?
Yeah, no, let's do college football now. Let's
All right.
save it for the final end for the NFL predictions.
All right. So we have a new national.
How was the two games first on New Year's Eve?
New Year's Day. I didn't watch either game.
Was it day or Eve?
New Year's Day.
Okay, New Year's Day.
I didn't watch either game.
Good for you, sports broadcaster.
College football has never really been that high.
Good for you, sports broadcaster.
I was enjoying more than winter classic.
Good for you, sports broadcaster.
The only game that mattered was the national championship game. Alabama won its fifth title in 9 years. Alabama's got its fifth national championship in 9 years.
And Alabama.
Georgia blew the game, basically. And it was after Jalen Hurts got pulled. And
yeah, Georgia lost to a rookie, freshman quarterback.
Well, there was two freshman quarterbacks in this game. Yeah,
but this was a pure freshman quarterback.
Yep.
Oh God, what the hell happened?
There were two freshman quarterbacks in this game. There was Tua Tagovailoa, who replaced took over at quarterback for Alabama. Ended up finishing the day, Jalen Hurts got off to a rough start, going 3 of 8 for 21 yards.
You gotta think that was like the best move ever, just to throw out a freshman quarterback.
Tiger LaVila finished with...
In the second half, down in the game.
They were down 13-0 when they made the switch.
That is so ballsy.
Yep.
For Alabama to do that.
Yeah, Georgia was dominating. They were up 13-0 at one point. They go to Tiger LaVila. He ended up finishing 14 of 24, 166 yards, 3 touchdowns. The 2 biggest ones being to Calvin Ridley with 3:49 left to tie the game. And then... He ended up hitting, where the hell was it? This was after, Alabama could have won it in regulation, but Pampinatos, the kicker, missed a 36-yarder as time expired.
How do you miss a 36-yarder?
I know. And then he ended up hitting Devontae Smith, the freshman, with a 41-yard score to win the game in overtime. And this was after Alabama had won a double overtime game just to get there.
Yeah.
And they beat, and this was, and that was after, and from what I remember, it was a fairly decent New Year's Day slate of games anyway. So, you got that. Alabama wins its 5th title in the last 9 years.
That has to be Alabama's most impressive win.
I know, it is.
Out of all the 5 titles in 9 years.
Trust me, it is. And interesting stat, I can't believe I'm going to utter
this. And they were the 4th seed, right?
Yeah, Alabama was the 4th seed.
God damn.
They knocked off Clemson to get there and ended up winning the national championship. But I can't believe I'm about to say this. ESPN showed a stat that they showed over social media is that every time in the last decade that Alabama's played in a national championship game, if Alabama has lost in the national championship game, LeBron James went to the finals and loses. If Alabama's won the national championship, a couple months later, ta-da! LeBron James wins an NBA championship.
That has to end.
Yeah.
That'd be cool if LeBron won, but to keep on happening like that, I just cannot see it happening.
I know.
More pressure on LeBron, ESPN. Thank you.
Yeah. Trust me, there's plenty of pressure on him, but I almost don't know how to react to it at this point.
Yeah, I know. It is definitely a dumbfounded stat. They just want to mention LeBron in the NCAA championship game.
Yeah, but that's ESPN for you, though.
I know. You don't like that. I know.
It drives me nuts.
This
was after Alabama rolled over Clemson 24-6 in the Sugar Bowl, and then Georgia beat Oklahoma in double overtime 54-48, which was a pretty exciting football game from what I heard. I missed most of it. But it was a good football game. I was channel surfing all night between Alabama, the national championship game, and Monday Night Raw.
Saw priorities, Matt. Priorities, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, but college football has never been that.
But it's the national title game.
I know. That's why I was channel surfing most of the night, and I finally ended up sticking with the national championship game. I'm sorry, but after that, I'm not even joking.
I'm full of disappointment in you, Matt.
Yeah, I know. But it's whatever. College football season's over. Congratulations again to Nick Saban and Alabama winning their 5th national championship.
But you're saying that what happened after Georgia took the lead? You decided to stop watching?
No, I kept the game on, but I thought, all right, Georgia's got this. Because Georgia had been kicking the crap out of Alabama most of the night. I thought they had it.
But this is Georgia sports we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. And the game was in Atlanta, no less.
This is Georgia sports we're talking about.
I know, especially with what's happened over the last year.
A blowout lead is not safe.
I know.
It's not safe until the clock hits zero.
Yeah. Yeah. The Falcons can tell you that first and foremost, and now so can Georgia.
Yeah. And the Hawks, too.
Yeah.
So.
Go figure, right?
Yeah.
Since
Georgia sports.
Running low on time. Want to pick football games?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to do the whole spiel with it, but yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, so we're not going to do the music and anything because there's no prediction, no pigskin tournament and stuff going on. So let's just go into it, Matt. Just start talking.
All right, so we got the 4 games in the division around. And
yay! 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
3 weeks left in the 3 weeks left in the regular season. 4 weeks total if you include the Pro Bowl. Do you include the Pro Bowl or not really?
Well, it's in between.
It's an all-star game.
I'm just saying, like, technically there's 4 weeks left. Because that's when the Super Bowl is.
I know.
So don't tread on me, Matt.
I know.
Go on.
All right. So betting lines as of now.
Yes, let's hear. I remember hearing that the Philadelphia Eagles are not favored. A first time ever that the number one seed is not favored in a divisional match.
Well, for obvious reasons.
Well, yes.
And that,
it's not like that they're the healthiest team.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go over this again with a full breakdown and predictions from myself and Steve again on the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. That'll be up by the time we kick off the games on Saturday. Betting, the line is Falcons -3 in Philadelphia. Falcons minus three.
So they're basically 3-point favorite. Now I heard it was like much less.
Yeah, as of one betting line I'm looking at, it's Falcons favorite. Well,
okay,
by
so
minus
what's
three.
The what's the betting line that we're going off of?
That, and it's through NJ.com.
New Jersey?
Yeah.
Let's go to Vegas.
Fine.
We're going through Jersey? No disrespect, but Vegas odds is where it's at. So Matt's pulling that up right now. Does he see it? Do you see it, Matt? Or are you still loading?
Nah, site I found isn't what I was looking for.
Okay. Tick, 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 tick,
I know.
Tick, tick, tick.
Shut up. I know. That site does nothing for me. Hold on.
All right. Ticking on. Ticking on.
Yeah, all right. That's fucking... Wow, that's an old betting line from last year's playoffs. Never mind. So, anyway, line's three. Atlanta favored -3 over Philly. I'm taking Atlanta in this game as well because, let's face facts, without Carson Wentz at quarterback, I don't trust Philadelphia.
Okay, so here's VegasInsider.com.
Okay.
All right, so let's see here. So we got still -3 for Atlanta.
Yep. And I'm going to end up sticking with the Atlanta pick, too. I'm going Atlanta by 14. Steve has made his predictions. He's going Atlanta by 10 over Philly.
Uh-huh.
Betting line for the other NFC game
Let's
would
see.
Be...
I got New England
yeah, New
favored
England,
by, was... by 13.5.
And I could see that happening. Tennessee's an all right football team, but they got by the choke artist known as the Kansas City Chiefs. They're not going to get...
Yeah,
anywhere near that
I mean,
lucky.
New England, again, is another complete team. I mean, there are some defensive, or there's just some holes there, but not, New England's still too strong enough for Tennessee to...
Walk away with the win.
Or even open up those vulnerabilities that New England has.
We're going to have slight differentials, myself and Steve, on the scores. Steve's taking the Pats by 21. I'm giving Tennessee a little more of a shot. I'm going New England by 17.
Okay.
Those are the two Saturday games. Kick off for the New
so
England
we
games.
Have this. Yeah, the first game up is Pittsburgh hosting Jacksonville.
Saturday's kickoffs. Atlanta and Philly's at 4:35. New England and Tennessee is at 8:15.
I thought we were going to Sunday. That's why.
No, we didn't give the times of the kickoffs yet.
Oh,
so
boy.
That's why I was backtracking. Now, Sunday, 1:05, Pittsburgh and Jacksonville.
Okay, so Vegas right now has Pittsburgh as a 7.5-point favorite.
And I could... honestly, I could agree with that. This is where Steve and I differ. Steve's taking the upset. He's picking the Jaguars to win by a field goal.
Ooh.
And with how bad Bortles Mania looked against Buffalo last week, he ain't getting that lucky against Pittsburgh. And neither is the Saxonville defense. Not gonna happen. The Killer Bees are going to have a field day with Jacksonville. Saxonville ain't going to work. I'm taking Pittsburgh by 21.
You know, we haven't heard Dan's predictions at all.
He didn't give any. Danny is not giving any predictions for the playoffs out of superstition. His team is still in it. He refuses to give predictions.
Can he give predictions for the other games?
No. He refuses to give any and all predictions.
Jeez.
That's the way Danny's it. That's the way Danny is. You should have known this by now. We've been doing this show how long?
I know, but still.
Exactly.
All right, so.
Final game up on the docket.
Yes, Minnesota hosting the Nolan Saints.
4:40 kickoff.
Yes, and the favorite is Minnesota by 3.5.
All right, now this could be a first in NFL history.
A first for what?
The Minnesota Vikings have the chance to become the first team ever to play at home in the Super Bowl. Because the Super Bowl is in Minnesota this year. So the Vikings are the first, could become the first team to ever do it.
I wonder how tickets would be like that. Would there only be half for Minnesota, or will Minnesota fans go buck wild if they make it to the Super Bowl?
I think
Bowl?
Minnesota fans would go buck wild, honestly.
Like usually in the neutral site and stuff, it's usually a 50-50 thing. So it's like, oh, we'll get 50% of the stadium for one team and 50% of the stadium to the other team.
Yeah.
But if Minnesota makes it to the playoffs, is Minnesota allowed, are the Vikings allowed to...
Heck, like, sell their own place out?
Yeah, to their own fans.
I think Vikings fans would get first crack at it. I mean, I'm sure Super Bowl tickets are probably already
gone
by now.
But are the Minnesota Vikings only allowed to sell half of the tickets to their fans, is what I'm saying.
That I don't know, honestly.
I really am curious to see how that turns out again, if they make it all the way to the Super Bowl.
Very true, but I don't think, in the history of the Super Bowl, the city that's hosting has never had a team with this good of odds to getting to the championship game.
No, I know that,
it's not going to matter anyway. Steve and I agree on this. The Saints are going to knock out the Vikings this
week. Okay, so you're not even going to know what's going to happen if they make it. I want to see Minnesota make it just to see what this scenario is like.
So do I. Like, part of me does, honestly.
Yeah, it's a nice curiosity.
Yeah, to see if the host city will actually have their team play in the game. But seriously, in the history of the Super Bowl, the city that's hosting their team has not gotten past the divisional round. Ever.
All right, well, we'll see how it happens this weekend.
Yeah, I mean... Well, again, the dreamer in me, like you, wants to see Minnesota get there just out of curiosity. But the realist in me is like, uh-uh. They're playing New Orleans.
Again, we'll just have to wait and see. And Steve's, on that note, it's time to close things up.
We will give predictions
Nice
again.
Predictions, yes.
Yep. Real fast, Steve's picking New Orleans by 4. I'm picking New Orleans by 7. Those are the picks. We'll have them again on social media.
Hopefully the Patriots will lose so we can get Dan's predictions finally.
Yep. But we will have all of that on social media. Facebook.com/SollySteveOnSports. Twitter at @S_S_Sports. Use the #SollySteve. You can get all your updates on the show, all your updates on the sports world, and you can ask us questions. We'll try to answer them as best we can each and every week right here on the air. You can follow us on our blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. All the latest episodes of the show are on iTunes, and every other piece of audio we've ever gotten is on SoundCloud. Just search Solly and Steve on Sports, hit download, and take the show with you wherever you go. And if you have any questions, concerns, comments, or whatever you don't want to leave on social media, fine with us. Email SollySteveOnSports@gmail.com. For everybody working hard behind the scenes, for Third Mike, Dan, Steve, if they ever decide to come back, and Jeff, I'm Solly. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Later.
Woo!